Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Tweet Coleman, a former Boeing 727 and 747 pilot with Continental Airlines. She has 22 years working in the FAA and is a published author of Take Your Life Off Autopilot. Tweet received her Doctorate of Aerospace Aviation Education and is currently teaching aviation-related courses and is today's host.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being with us. My name is Tweet Coleman, and I'm one of the hosts for the Florida Aviation Network. We're live and in the clear this afternoon, and we're here in Central Florida Aerospace Academy in the Aerospace Center of Sun and Fun. It's a beautiful grounds here, and it's all in Lakeland, Florida. I'm sure all of us have heard about Lakeland, Florida. It's beautiful weather all week, so if you haven't been here, try to come, because there's no rain in sight here in Lakeland, Florida. We'd like to welcome our next guest is Marco Russolini. Is that correct?
Rusconi.
Okay, Italiano. Thank you for being with us.
Pleasure to meet you, too.
Yes, thank you. And we had somebody else from Canada just before you. And Robin, and so we have another person that spent a few years in Canada, right?
Fantastic. Yes, the short story, I'm Italian born. My father taught me how to fly in an old biplane when I was very young. I was very fortunate. But my mom hails from Victoria, British Columbia, on the west coast of Canada. So I grew up with two passports, and I chose to, in my teenage years, finish my schooling in Canada and join the Canadian Air Force.
Great.
After that.
Great. Yeah. So right out of high school, you joined the...
Correct, yes. Uh-huh. I spent 14 years in serving in the RCAF. I was incredibly fortunate. I got to be an instructor and standards pilot in our home training base in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, which is one of the most beautiful parts of our country. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was incredibly fortunate to fly for our national aerobatic team, the Canadian Forces Snowbirds, for four seasons, from 2008 and 2011. I served as the number four pilot for 2 years, so that's the slot pilot, and then number seven pilot, so the outer left wing.
Wow. I don't think I've ever met a snowbird pilot. Thank you so much for coming today.
That's a true honor. Thank you for
having me. Yes. Now, when you say you flew number four spot, is it?
Correct, yes.
What does that mean, actually?
So, if you imagine a diamond drawn with nine dots, the number four spot would be the slot pilot, or the center dot of the entire formation.
Okay.
Yes. Not much room to go anywhere else. You're right in the middle.
So are you kind of like the quarterback of the team or something?
Of sorts, yes. certainly not in my first year. First year, we're just there to learn.
Yeah. How do they select people in certain spots? How's that done?
The short story, to become a snowbird, you have to dream about it a lot.
I bet.
And if you're very fortunate, your name goes in a big pile. And if you're even more fortunate, your name stays in the pile. And if you're even more fortunate, then you're invited over to the squadron to carry out a tryout. So you'll spend 4 weeks with the team and the team pilots. You learn how to fly their airplane, which is a Canadian-built Canadair tutor. And you'll fly with current team pilots, and they'll just assess your ability to learn and to assimilate the team's standard operating procedures and the way they want you to operate the airplane. And at the end of those intensive 4 weeks, the team selects who their next season pilots are going to be.
So it's like a four-week interview, would you say?
Correct, yeah. And it encompasses both your personality side as well as your flying, and there's a flying side to it, obviously.
You know, you said a unique word about your ability to accept instruction.
Correct.
Because we know as pilots that we don't always accept instruction that well, do we?
Well, I think in the flying world, being so unforgiving, the attitude that seems to be the most open tends to be, the one where you can learn the most from everybody around you. And mm-hmm. Every day is a different day, and there's always stuff to learn. I find, as I'm so fortunate to continue to do this in my life, every landing or every single flight, if I'm not learning something from it, I think that's a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you flew for them for 4 years. Where did the snowbirds fly? I remember I saw them in Reno, I think in 09 or 010. Yeah. Where else do they fly?
Yeah, so the snowbirds will fly on average 65 shows a year.
Wow.
In about 30 different locations throughout North America. So I was so fortunate to fly shows from Elmendorf, Alaska, all the way to Fort Lauderdale in Florida, and all the way up to, and we were up in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and we went all the way down to California. So we crossed the continent far and wide.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting question. When you're flying at Elmendorf in Alaska, what is the temperature? That would be a big difference in flying in Florida. How do you accommodate for that?
It is. And, you know, we're fortunate to train in the winter in Moose Jaw, which is not warm. Mm-hmm. And but Elmendorf in the summer was actually not that bad.
Oh, you were in the
temperatures
summer.
Were above freezing the entire time. But it was a great time. And the base hosted us in a wonderful way. We're mm-hmm. very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. Does the airplane, how does it fly different whenever it's real cold out there or cooler? The snowbird.
Well, like every airplane out there, performance will increase. Your engines will perform better. Your wings will perform better. But part of the training is to be able to carry out that show in different conditions as well. And that's what the training season addresses.
Wow. Yeah. And how far are you from the number two person and the number four person?
So. Like Lego, the entire training season is made by building blocks, right? So we'll just build one block after the other, and eventually, when everybody's trust and comfort level is developed, we'll fly about 3 to 4 feet one from the other.
And, 3 to 4 feet.
Yes, and it's quite a special feeling. It takes quite a bond between the team members to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I guess what a friendship and trust that you have to have.
Absolutely.
Not only flying, but even on the ground when you're meeting with the people. And
exactly. And it's, something that I felt so honored to be doing. And it's one thing to be able to, live your dream, but it's another to continue to share it with other people. And mm-hmm. that was pretty special.
Yeah, I think you'd be a great ambassador for the program.
Well, thank you for saying that. I was just humbly fortunate to be part of it.
good. So what are you doing these days in flying?
So I'm very fortunate right now to work as an instructor at Stallion 51.
Okay.
And also I'm an instructor at Stallion's sister company, UAT, or Unusual Attitude Training. We will train professional pilots to address one of the biggest issues that we see in the aviation industry today, which is loss of control in flight. The short story comes down to the fact that regular training within the scope to achieve our licenses and permits does not allow enough time or resources or aircraft performance to be able to teach pilots to actually properly maneuver airplanes when faced with an unusual attitude. And so what we do at Unusual Attitude Training, or UAT, is that we will run a two-day program where professional pilots will come and get an aeromedical brief with our local AME, Dr. Bill Bush, and they'll run through all the aeromedical aspects of the physiology that's involved in when faced with unusual attitude, after which we will cover some ground school, which includes some aerodynamics, and then we will progress to the dynamics of recovery. After that, we will run two sorties flown in the L-39 Albatross, which has similar performance to a business jet type airplane. We've modified ours specifically to make them look like a business jet, so we have a full state-of-the-art glass cockpit and recording system that can be used for debriefing. And we will, on the first day, we'll run a visual sortie or a VMC sortie, and on the second day, we'll run an IMC sortie. We do that by we have a curtain in the back seat of our airplanes, and we can close that curtain and simulate IMC conditions. And so our candidates, based on their background and experience level, will be able to just grasp concepts that normal simulator training, airline training, or aircraft transition training just is not able to address. Specifically, you know, actually exposing a pilot to gravitational accelerations and actually see, hey, how does that feel? And actually introducing, some aerodynamic concepts that may not be immediately apparent, especially when our brain is trying to calculate or make sense of an unusual situation. When faced with unusual attitudes, we're human, and we will always rise to the level of our training. And so the problem that UAT tries to address is exactly that, is this expand pilots' comfort levels to be able to make them a bit more comfortable if ever they were ever faced with that type of situation.
Right. So what level pilot typically comes to your school? Do they have a commercial instrument?
Yeah, they're all professional business aviation or general aviation pilots. Some of them have military background and may have had some unusual attitude training in the past. Others may have not. And in the industry, the unusual attitude training reputation tends to be tarnished by people that have experienced, physiologically not pleasant experiences. Our bodies are just, you know, if any of us were to go fly and do what Mr. Rob Holland does every day in his incredible aerobatics, you know, we'd have a tough time getting used to that. Our approach is a bit more of a step-by-step approach. So we will just tailor the maneuvering totally based on each pilot's comfort level and tailor it to their backgrounds as well.
Mm-hmm. I know whenever I was flight instructing full-time, you could almost tell in the first 5 or 10 minutes sitting with the pilot what their level is. Do you find that to be true?
Well, I find that, we're always learning from each other, right. First and foremost. Uh-huh. And secondly, you know, we're not learning anything unless the experience is positive, right? Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that no matter what the experience is. Mm-hmm. Is
so do they get a video then?
Correct.
That
yes.
is really great
and
feedback.
Then, our state-of-the-art recording system that we have installed on board, we'll register the PFD or the primary flight display data. As well, on there, we can superimpose our gravitational acceleration data, as well as our angle of attack data. And all of that is a fantastic debrief tool to demonstrate concepts such as, how close to the aerodynamic limit a pilot got, mm-hmm. or, how much an unload could have helped in that case or not, based on the situation that we were facing. So, they're great debriefing tools and a great way for us to refer back to our candidates when they come back for recurrent training for it. So each one of us as instructors will review those tapes and so that we can tailor the next sortie based on what the previous sortie had been, even if it was 2 years before, and we can actually get better success that way.
What do you recommend if somebody comes for the two-day training? Do you recommend them every 2 years to come back? I know everybody's different, but...
Yes. In the end, it'll depend on everyone's mm-hmm. or every flight department's comfort level. We find that a two-year cycle is a manageable mm-hmm. cycle, and we're having great success with mm-hmm. that.
So the first time is basically getting a baseline of
correct.
The... pilot and their abilities and so on. Now, you're in Kissimmee. I've been to your hangar. It's a beautiful hangar.
You.
And I had chatted with KT, who works there. I don't know if she's with you today.
Yes,
but she's a great...
She has the tough task of keeping us all in line.
I'm sure she does a good job. But so you're in Kissimmee. So what airspace, where do you go and how high do you fly?
Yes, so our... sortie profiles normally take place above 10,000 feet.
Above 10?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the L-39s are all pressurized, and so we can be up 14, 15,000 feet quite comfortably. And we have a dedicated airspace south of the Kissimmee Airfield where we work. And we have a good relationship with the Miami controllers that that provide flight following throughout those sorties as well. And so not only, you know, do we have the state-of-the-art traffic information systems, but also, you know, we're on board with ATC's team to deconflict with traffic.
It sounds like an ideal situation. You've thought about everything, I think.
Wow. It's the boss of, or correction, the vision of Lee Lauterbach, our company president and chief pilot. He's, you know, we're just very honored and humbled to be able to fulfill his vision, which is pretty special.
What are some of the comments that you get from the pilots? What do they say after the training, or maybe even a few months later?
Each pilot, the average experience of our candidates that come and visit us, is what we hope, which is that they've learned something that maybe they have not seen or thought about before. And that to us is the biggest compliment that we can get. Hey, I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Or I never really understood that properly. So if we could pass on that knowledge, that's truly what the scope of the training is all about.
Mm-hmm. And I would think that, you know, it's kind of a once in a lifetime for many pilots that would be able to do that experience.
Once again, you know, the problem that we try to address is providing sharper tools for pilots to add to their toolbox so that if ever were they to be faced with an unusual attitude situation, then they'd be in a better position to recover.
Mm-hmm. Truly, it sounds like a preventative situation to prevent things from happening and
Correct.
So on. Yeah.
And that's what we try and put forward.
Yeah. About how many flights do you do a day then?
So on average, we'll fly four candidates every 2 weeks, is what the schedule currently is holding, and you know, the latest COVID challenges for the industry have saturated flight departments, and so they've made it a little harder for air crews to be released for specific type training. So we've seen a bit of a change just as flight departments were readjusting. But things are going back to about that pace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if an individual has a jet, do you ever get requests to have them train in their airplane? Or do you suggest that? Or?
So, you know, if they're in a position to, we recommend everybody to get this type of training. But for personal owners, unusual attitude training does not do ab initio jet transition training. Our focus remains on the unusual attitude training mission.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know your airplanes, and they're fitted with your airplanes and so on. Yeah. Well, if you have any listeners out there, is there anything when somebody fills out an application and they say, what can I do to prepare for my training, what would you say?
So for no matter what type of training in general, and you know what I like to share is make the most of it, and that starts with a solid preparation. So, you know this very well of being a CFI yourself. As instructors, we tend to think of ourselves as unlockers of knowledge, mm-hmm. correct? Like mm-hmm. where we just point in the direction where our students will hopefully be able to unlock knowledge, and so. For anybody that is undergoing any type of training, you know, preparation is key. Try and get all the course material, and whether it's on the curriculum or outside the curriculum, and then show up with a list of questions. I think that's always a great way to show that your IP is that you're very prepared and very keen. And then approach it with a positive attitude. You know, remain open to criticism, which is the only way that we get better in aviation. We don't learn anything if nobody has anything to say about our flying, right? And So absolutely, those would be my key things. Prepare and remain with an open attitude.
Great. Do you send them a book on the L39 ahead of time?
So most of the unusual attitude training course material is contained within the FAA publications. And so we will grab those chapters and just reemphasize those. But also what we ask our candidates to do is to look in their own flight manuals and actually apply that knowledge to the type that they're flying. And so we'll ask them specific questions about, you know, maneuvering speed of your specific airplane. What does that mean to you? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that can all be done off your AOM or F1.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Probably some of the speeds that you don't even think about on a daily basis would be very important if you're doing any.
And what we do every day becomes our comfort level, right? And if we think of the full maneuvering envelope of an airplane, which is plus 90 degrees nose high, 90 degrees nose low, and 180 degree roll left and right, and then what the FAA considers an unusual attitude, right? Which is 25 degrees nose high, 10 degrees nose low, and then an excess of 45 degrees.
Just a fraction of what it can do,
right? It's very, very small, right? And so the problem is that we spend most of our time, even in smaller envelopes, than that. And so for us to expect to be able to recover from an extreme unusual attitude or even a moderate unusual attitude, without having spent much time there, it quite challenging.
Yeah.
And so by exposing our candidates to that, we hope to just normalize that a little bit.
Right, normalize it. Well, it definitely sounds like a major confidence builder for the candidate, yes. And so anybody that's listening that would want to partake in that, I highly suggest to look you folks up at P51. Yeah, thank you
very much. You can, if you would like to read more about it, please look us up at www.jetuat.com.
Jetuat.com.
Yeah,
okay.
And come see us in Kissimmee. We'd love to see you.
Good. Thank you, Marco. Who wouldn't want to fly with a Canadian snowbird, right? I definitely would want to do that. Well, this is Tweet Coleman, one of the hosts for the Florida Aviation Network. Thank you for being with us this afternoon.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.